She doesn't just fit into one role. Undisputed television superstar, a feisty politician, one of India's most influential women leaders, Smriti Irani, welcome to India, Russia and the World.
Thank you for having me.
You've lived many lives. Actor, parliamentarian, minister. Which one would you say is your favorite?
I think that the audacity to live so many characters, real and real, is what is the thrill of life, what is the spice of life. And I don't look at myself from the silo of either a media personality or a politician. All of it and some of it is just me. So I think it's thrilling just to be me.
And so many versions of you.
I'm one of those who has exploded on the media scene with two different career paths. And that is what possibly attracts a lot of attention. But I have always maintained that what I am is just a quintessential Indian woman. The only difference between me and the others is that I have a microphone and the others don't.
You're a star, Smriti. The lead in India's...
I barely look like one.
Oh, of course you
so
do.
Your viewers may be a bit confused.
Come on. But I do...
Stars don't come wearing glasses to studios like this.
But is that deliberate, if I can ask you?
No, I think that given that I've been in the public eye now for 30 years, I do not oscillate between the reality of me and the public perception of me. I believe that if you meet people, they should not feel that there is a distinct version of you which is available to them as a public personality, which is very different from what you are in your personal life. I feel people are clever enough to catch that gap. And I would not want to dissuade somebody away from that reality of me. I also believe that women have this added onus and burden to look a particular way, especially if they belong to media and they are camera-facing personalities, that women have an equal burden to conduct themselves a way, which possibly something that female politicians across the world may agree with. And between those two expectations, I just wanted to be me.
You're a star, Smriti. The lead in one of India's biggest blockbuster daily soap, Kyunki Saas Bhi Kabhi Bahu Thi. Let me try and translate it for the international audience, because every mother-in-law was once upon a time a daughter-in-law. This beautiful complexity of the great Indian family, is it tough to explain to a Western society?
Universal impact of the show is such. I have seen it resonate with people from cultures where there is no expectation that it be accepted. For instance, I went to Saudi Arabia and there was a huge surge of viewership, which was an amalgamation of people from many nationalities. But irrespective of the color of their skin, irrespective of their geographical differences, the theme as such of the soap resonated with people. What was fascinating is that people who felt that the cultures are extremely conservative, the male counterparts were as respectful as the female counterparts in the families that I met. Similarly, my experience from Afghanistan was something which was extremely mind-boggling for me. The fact that I had people write in to say war came to a close at that one particular half-hour slot when Kyunki Saas Bhi Kabhi Bahu Thi was playing. And the person who dubbed for me in Afghanistan also stood for elections. That kind of fascinated me. I had feedback from Fiji. There was a translation of my work in Swahili. So I think that if emotions, family values have a universal language, then this is primarily the reason why this particular soap resonated with so many people across so many countries.
You worked closely with Prime Minister Modi. Is he a good boss?
He's one of the best.
Really?
Yes, because he gives you, he defers to your sense of competence. He, in some way, also accelerates your sense of competitiveness. And I've had the privilege of working with him for now over two decades. So he's somebody who pushes you to be better as a professional, as a person. And since I've consistently seen that in him as a theme, as a boss, as an elder, that is one of the best people that you can get to guide.
What equation do his ministers, his party people usually share with him? Are they scared of him?
He is intolerant of incompetence. He believes, and this is something that he himself has said in public platforms, he believes that it is nothing less than a privilege to be available to people at large and be of service to them. Anybody who says that they're scared of him are people who possibly are propagating one of the greatest myths. He is somebody I have seen who defers to not only competence, he's somebody who also defers to people with knowledge. He's also someone who has amazing memory. Mm-hmm. So if I today have a conversation on, let's say, Project X with him, he will remember what we spoke in 2007 about the same thing.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes. He has amazing recall. So when you work with him, you better be on your toes and you better know the X factor about your project or any other project. He does not tolerate incompetence. He is somebody who values if you bring something additional to the table.
Would you say that the Prime Minister has changed the BJP, the Bharatiya Janata Party?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
One, he is of the opinion that it is not possible that only your assimilated group will have all the knowledge. He will accumulate people who have knowledge of areas which possibly policymakers have not delved into, which are people presume are problems of the future or opportunities of the future. So he does not waste time on just celebrating his achievements in the present. If you look at the cohort of people that he has built, you judge them if they are publicly available as ministers or policymakers. But in every field, he will have the best, not newsmakers, knowledge makers, system makers with him. He also cherishes people with institutional memory. He will be equally at ease with the oldest serving clerk in an office as he would be with the CEO.
Is that true, though?
I've seen it in action. So the fact that he democratizes opinions and he wants to listen is not something that is often spoken about him.
In the last 12 odd years, what would you say has been Narendra Modi's biggest achievement?
I will pick three. Women were always on the sidelines of political narratives. For the first time in 2014, I remember I was Minister of Education. We had the Prime Minister stand at the ramparts of the Red Fort and say, let's build toilets for women and let's build it separately for girls who go to school so that we can reduce dropout. Never in the history of India had a Prime Minister, let alone a man, stand there on Independence Day and made such a speech and made it a functional part of parlance. Politically so, because building toilets was not a political necessity.
It wasn't.
And it was not a political weapon. It was not a political mandate. Then he reaches out and he makes women's issues national issues. We owe that repositioning of women politically as a unit in Indian polity to Narendra Modi, I think. The second, I think, biggest achievement of Narendra Modi is the digitization, economically fundamentally, of those who always were at the margins of the Indian treasury. The fact the whole banking structure of this country could be just dedicated to that one cause, that go and make sure every Indian is accounted for and is connected to a financial institution formally, the gigantic banking engagement. It was historic. That was a hallmark of Narendra Modi. One, to formalize an engagement of the citizen that was always on the margins with banks, and then to layer it with a digital ecosystem. And I think the third achievement, because I said I'll pick three, is what Modi did during COVID. I think from COVID, everywhere there was a conversation about 600,000 villages, how will India survive, how will the poorest of the poor manage. I remember last day of February, WHO gave its standards to make PPE suits. And the 1st of March, we had the lockdown. And The Prime Minister asked, he had created a group of experts, bureaucrats, ministers to say, everybody give me a deadline. We had as a country 55,000 suits at that time. And in a billion plus country, that is a nightmare for anybody in administration. COVID actually was an exemplary manifestation of what Indians are capable of when there's a partnership between the Prime Minister and the people, you know, and from PPE suits onwards to the vaccine, the dissemination of vaccine, to the dissemination of food grains. And today we have the largest food security program on planet Earth. I think that is something that I witnessed firsthand, a nation in crisis, the world locked down, and a leader rising to the occasion.
And then India was able to manufacture vaccines, Covaxin, and also supply it
to
other countries.
We supplied it to 160 countries. We could, at that time when the world's back was to the wall, we said we are not holding supply chains hostage. We are democratizing the solutions that we have. We, as a country, managed. Industry and government came together. By May, we had 1,100 Indian companies. By June, we were the second largest exporters of the world. And the Chinese PPE came in at around $2,200. By the time India got manufacturing, that same kit cost $127. That was history in the making.
Can I say something, though? While you say that there were so many achievements and...
I've picked only three.
You picked three. And let's talk about COVID. There were international organizations, international media that were saying a lot of bad things about India.
I saw firsthand people saying, oh, almost every child is orphaned in India. And I did a call out both to UN agencies domestically and internationally, because there were two statements made about India. One statement emanated from an international agency and its headquarters that Indian women are surely getting beaten up at home because they're homebound, and almost every Indian woman currently is getting beaten up. And I remember calling the representative and I said, how did you reach this conclusion? They said, no, it's our fear. And I said, your fear is that in a billion plus people, 500 million men are beating up 500 million women. They said, no. I said, would you like to correct it? I think what Modi facilitates is us as ministers taking a stand for your country, and your prime minister backs you.
Do you think this wasn't happening before?
I wasn't minister before, so I can't evidence whether it was happening before. But in my experience of working with him as minister, you would have never had to in any way doubt his support if you're standing up for your country.
During my travels as a journalist and back and beyond of India, I've seen women especially, they have this very special emotional bond with the Prime Minister. Some would call him or look at him as their son, some as their brother. What is this that
he
has?
He's not somebody who indulges in, he doesn't indulge in people or circumstances where people would possibly be sycophants. He hates that. I have seen him abruptly bring a conversation to a close when he feels somebody is indulging in sycophancy. And that is very different from the image certain journalists try to create about him.
Yeah.
It is overwhelming for anybody to possibly meet somebody like Narendra Modi after they've seen a personal impact in their lives. For instance, I've seen that in amongst women who practice farming, or for that matter, run dairies, small ones, who get collateral-free loans, who've genuinely had a financial turnaround in their own lives. Women are more expressive, and I've actually seen men emote out. I've seen men literally break down.
And while Narendra Modi enjoys so much public support, so many people love him so deeply. But then there is a section of people within India, but also outside, who dislike him, who don't like him with equal amount of passion. What is that?
I think Modi doesn't judge, at least what I know, doesn't judge himself or his contribution from the lens of who loves him or who hates him. I haven't seen in 20 years him personally pursue this whole desire that please like me. He says that if you have to take tough decisions for your country, for your people, just take those decisions. There are consequences to those decisions. But as long as your nation is favored, your people have a better future and your people are secure and protected and they have more opportunities. That's it.
I'm going to go back to you now. What's it like to be a woman in politics? Not the BJP, but politics in general. Do you think that men have it easier?
Does anybody have it easy in politics? I think that it is such a competitive space, given the multiple mediums of communication today, that irrespective of man or woman, there are certain sets of challenges. The challenge with being a woman in politics possibly doesn't emanate when you're just in politics. It possibly emanates when you have to leverage power.
Makes sense.
So you will not be dissuaded from being in politics because you're a woman. It is how are you judged when you implement power. That is the only differentiating factor.
So not that different really for men and women, you'd say?
No.
Yeah?
I think that that is one of the greatest fallacies that is woven so that it in some way keeps women away from plunging into the throes of politics. I am not saying that... It is very easy. I may be an exception. It is certainly easy for those who come from a dynasty, certainly comparatively easy for people who have money. It is not easy if you come from absolutely grassroots or absolutely no money. It is tough, but it's not impossible.
When AK-203 Rifle Factory was inaugurated in Amethi, a small town in Uttar Pradesh, Russian President Vladimir Putin, he sent a special message to the people of the constituency. Once upon a time, it was your constituency. You were standing there with the Prime Minister right there. What was that moment like?
It was somebody who's had a lifelong desire of shaking the hand of Vladimir Putin. For me, it was a personal big high. For the region, it was a matter of great pride because the AK-203 factory, the decision was that there'll be a production of close to 600,000 units. It's a 5,000 crore investment that came to a defunct plant. For us, from a manufacturing perspective in the constituency, it was a great achievement. Mm-hmm. The whole imagery in itself was surreal, that you're in Amethi, which is one of the most hotly contested parliamentary constituencies in Indian politics. And never before in the history of Amethi that had happened. The Indian Prime Minister sits on dais and you have Mr. Putin on the screen. So as somebody who is a student of politics, possibly, surreal moment.
Mm-hmm. Did people even understand what's going on there?
I think they were gobsmacked. I think that everybody that I spoke to never expected to see Vladimir Putin on screen.
In Amethi.
Yep.
Why has the India-Russia friendship remained so strong? Is it trust or is it something else?
Because we are not friends only in the good times. We have seen our share as countries, as friends, through difficult times.
Yeah.
We have seen fissures appear across polity internationally. But there is something about our people-to-people relationship. There is something about our G2G relationship that is not transient. There is a sense of strength in it. There is a sense of reliability in it. And there is also a sense that irrespective of our geographical distance, when in trouble, we will have each other's back and we will have respect for each other. It is rare to have a relationship that is steeped in such respect and which has endured such a length of time.
And why do you think that the West is so uncomfortable when it comes to India's friendship with Russia? I mean, Navarro's statement a year ago when Mr. Modi was in China, he said, why is the leader of the largest democracy in the world getting into bed with Xi and Putin?
I think the best of friendships are those that need no explanation. We don't choose our friends depending on the likeness or the dislike of somebody else. Those are not then friendships. Those are convenient relationships.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Prime Minister Modi has balanced the need for India to have its own set of friends, the fact that he has respected everybody's point of view but has firmly stood by our friendship with Russia is something which I don't think even the Prime Minister has explained. So when the leader of my country finds no need to explain our stand, our friendship, I don't see why I need to.
Okay, fair enough. And Narendra Modi and Vladimir Putin, both of them have enjoyed a long-lasting public support. People love them. Do you think that there are some similar common traits about both the leaders?
I think they're both emotional about their countries.
Mm-hmm.
They value the support of their people. And there is a sense of joy in sharing knowledge, in sharing achievements of each other's countries. That is something that I've never had the pleasure. Like I said, it's a lifelong dream to meet Mr. Putin. But that is something that I take away from my colleagues, that I take away from the Prime Minister himself. There's a huge sense of respect and admiration for the people of Russia and for Mr. Putin.
Smriti, you have a huge fan base, but I want to know, who are you a fan of?
The two gentlemen we've been discussing thus far.
Okay. Years from now, how would you like to be remembered? Actress, politician?
I think that we make a big mistake if we think people remember. People fade.
You see?
No matter. It is very rare. I think if there's anybody in this ecosystem that shall be remembered are the two leaders we've discussed. Because they've gone beyond perceptions. They have endured a huge length of time in public service. So it's very rare to be those kind of personas. I'm barely there. So I don't think I'll be remembered. It would be extremely foolhardy for me to give myself that much importance.
You're being too humble now. But before we let you go, I have a lightning round for you.
Okay.
So will you try to be quick when I ask you the questions?
Hopefully.
Tulsi Irani, the iconic television character, or Smriti Irani, the politician?
Politician any day. It's a great privilege to serve your people.
Upper house or the lower house of the Indian Parliament, which one did you enjoy more?
Both.
Pick one.
Both. I was feisty in both.
You were. I remember those speeches, Smriti.
I was feisty, but also productive in both.
Twitter fights or parliamentary debates? Which one?
Parliamentary debates.
Which one harder to win?
Both are not hard to win. But parliamentary debates, I'll take over Twitter fights any day. There's, like I said, a sense of purpose. And it is a privilege.
The first word that comes to your mind when I say India?
Matribhumi.
Russia?
Friend.
Modi?
Mentor, guide, prime minister, leader par excellence, many words.
Putin?
Somebody I wish one day I get to meet.
Trump?
President.
Smriti Irani, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.